our voices are all slightly different. And sure, maybe we're regurgitating some of the same information over and over again. It's not, you know, true that there is something new every day, right? But it's the way that you string your words together that's either going to resonate with someone or not. And that felt important for me to step into and find a way to speak it out.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 124 of the Mad Happy Podcast. I'm Mason, and today we have an amazing conversation with Vienna Farron, who is an author, a therapist, a podcaster as of this week, and just a really great mental health professional with a large presence on Instagram. You may know her from there, doing really, really a lot of amazing work in the space. We actually had Vienna's husband on, Connor, a while back. Connor Beaton goes by Man Talks on Instagram. And that was a really amazing conversation. So it was great to meet his other half and be able to talk to Vienna just about the work that she's doing, sort of how she thinks about the mental health landscape and a lot of the things that she's passionate about, whether it's the internal family systems or sort of how we deal with the trauma that we're handed to be able to not really become a new version of ourselves, but really unlock the version of ourselves that we've always been. You know, I think that she talks about some really amazing stuff around wounds, particularly during childhood, and sort of how they can manifest later in our lives and in some unwanted behaviors. And yeah, it was just really a great conversation. She released a book earlier this year called The Origins of You, which is really great. I definitely encourage you guys to check out. And then she also has a podcast that is coming out this week. First episode should be out actually by the time that you guys hear this, called This Keeps Happening, which is available wherever you get your pod. So definitely check that out. And yeah, hope you enjoy the conversation with Vienna. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Vienna Farron. I wanted to start just because I just listened to this teaser that you dropped for your podcast that's coming next week. Just a little bit about that. I mean, it's coming out next week. Would love to know sort of like the origin of that, if you've always sort of wanted to get into the audio space, how that came about and like what your idea was for the show.
Getting into the audio space was the bottom of my list. I never wanted to have a podcast.
Yeah.
It was not something that was interesting to me. I think that there are so many, you know, everybody has a podcast these days type of a thing. And I felt like there were enough expert to expert conversations that were being had. And yeah, like certainly my conversation with someone be slightly different. Yeah. But it just wasn't something where I was really interested in putting a lot of my time and energy. And I had finished writing my first book, The Origins of You. And I guess the audio team with my agents went out to try to sell a show. I didn't even know that they were doing it. And they came to me one day and they were like, so we have an offer on a podcast for you. And I was like, oh, sorry, what? You know, like I wasn't expecting this at all. And it's like, I'm not really interested in it. And they're like, well, hold on, hang tight. Like, you know, what would you be open to doing? And what we landed on was me doing anonymous sessions. I use that loosely because it's not therapy, but, you know, doing anonymous sessions with guests, individuals, couples who are struggling with something. And it's cool. It's really incredible, actually. I don't know these people. I get two sentences about them before we sit down. I don't see them again. It's a one-time, one-hour consultation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, yeah, let's do this. It's cool. And then I get into it. I'm like, wow, this is so much harder than I actually expected it to be.
Yeah.
I've been a therapist for over 15 years. I've worked with people, you know, over 25,000 hours of therapy, and like, I can do this. And I'm sitting down, I'm like, wow, this is just so much more challenging because there's no safety and there's no trust built. It's like, there's no relationship. I know nothing about you.
Zero foreplay. You're just like right in.
Yeah. Zero foreplay. I'm right in. And I have a short amount of time to, like get somewhere, you know, like to make the show interesting at minimum, right, for the listener. And I found it to be really, really hard. And it's a beautiful challenge, but I wanted to say yes to this because I think regardless, somebody listening in is going to see themselves. They're going to see someone they care about in the anonymous guests on the show. And I also think it's just a sneak peek into what, even though it is not therapy, what therapy can look like. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people are like, ah, like here's the story I have about it. And I definitely don't want to go do that thing.
Yeah.
And I think getting to hear what it might sound like inside those walls, hopefully is an opening for someone somewhere. And yeah, I'm pumped for it to launch next week.
Yeah, I was like so taken back almost like listening to that whatever 5-minute clip that you had, like almost like I wasn't supposed to be listening to this. You know what I mean? I think it had such a like a fly on the wall type vulnerable feel that I was almost uncomfortable, but to like an interesting level. And I think that was something really unique about the show that I agree there are a million podcasts out there, but this one did feel very different for me. And like it, I've never listened to anything where it just feels like you're sitting in on a stranger's session, like you said, which I think was so powerful. And I think also like a lot of the tools that you use, you know, sort of putting the onus on the client to sort of, you know, when you lead them with those sentences, right? If this happens, then I, whatever. I think that that's also really powerful for a lot of listeners who aren't as familiar with therapy, where like, it's not just you're giving this woman advice on what she should do about this situation. It's really like, you know, getting down to her level, empathizing in that way, and sort of like leading her with those breadcrumbs, which I feel like is the opposite of like what a lot of people stereotypically think about as like a therapy session.
Yeah. I think people either think it's a lot of yapping that a therapist is going to do and give you advice, or it's going to be a therapist who just kind of sits back and, you know, nods their head while the client, you know, speaks a lot and doesn't get challenged or doesn't get any type of direction. And, you know, therapy is truly an art form. You know, it's like you do need the science of it, certainly, but I think that the best therapists out there are the ones who have an art form to it. And I think that is going to be displayed in the show. And yeah, it's like, I love what you said, just being that fly in the room and you're like, whoa, should I be listening? Yeah. You know, it's like, this is like deeply vulnerable. And there's some
it's
that
intense.
Are,
yeah, it's like, it's intense. It's not an easy listen. It's like,
no,
yeah,
no. And there's so much. Like there will be some episodes that I imagine most people will be in tears listening to, you know?
Absolutely. And,
like what happens when we just allow ourselves to learn through another. The way that I approach writing my book too, honestly, where I think it can sometimes be hard for us as individuals or couples or part of a family to like just look at ourselves. But when you story tell through another, right, and you're like, ooh, that sounds like me, or like, ooh, that sounds like my partner, there's something that I think feels a little bit less threatening. And so sometimes the introduction to this work can be a little bit more palatable when we're experiencing it that way, or like, no, not me, but you. And so, yeah, I love this show for that reason. And what the book asks of people as well too.
Yeah. Is there sort of like an overarching strategy or idea that you have to the show of like how you want to pick certain people who submit, or are you really just taking it like one episode at a time? Are there certain themes that you want to sort of convey, or is it really just like an episode by episode thing?
It's episode by episode. Sure, there's some vetting that has to happen, you know, to make sure that it's a good candidate for the show. But I really like having different personalities show up. There's one episode that'll be one of the first, I think, 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. The alias name is Randy, and you know, he's coming in because he notices that he's super annoyed all the time with people. He's like quick to anger, right? And he's just trying to understand it. Like, I think he's
Larry David. Yeah.
Totally. And and my assumption, maybe guess, is like he's in his 60s and he's been a long-term caregiver to his wife, who's a quadriplegic, has MS, and it's been, you know, deteriorating over, you know, many decades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's just like, I'm a jerk, you know, his words, and just like annoyed. And they're like, is there anything that's off limits for the conversation with Vienna? And he's like, no, as long as she doesn't say anything annoying. And I'm like, this dude, I'm like, I'm so here for it, right? It's like, yeah. And so I only share that, right? Because I like got such a kick out of those two sentences.
Yeah,
like, we think he's kind of joking, but he might not be. Yeah. And, you know, right. And I'm like, yes, give me this personality because I want to see what we can do. And so, you know, yes, there's things that the producers are looking for, of course. And because it's, you know, there's no follow-up. You know, we want to make sure that people are in an okay enough place, that they're not in a crisis moment.
Right.
You know, this wouldn't be appropriate for that. But yeah, trying to get different types of personalities in there and yeah. not necessarily people who are so familiar with therapy and, you know, have done all this work. You know, it's like we want hard nuts to crack sometimes too.
100%. And, yeah. I wonder, it's like, it's interesting to think about how many people who come on, if they'll already, maybe if they're already in therapy, probably not. And then like, maybe if then that conversation will, you know, sort of inspire them to go find some care after the show.
For sure. Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And then it's called This Keeps Happening. And is it available everywhere or where
everywhere.
Can people find it?
Yeah. Anywhere you do your podcast listening.
Right.
And we drop our first episode on September 27th.
Amazing. Well, yeah, I'm super excited for the show. I think our listeners will be able to relate to it a ton. And I just think it's such a unique show in this crowded space. So we're definitely excited for that. I know you mentioned your book a few times as well. That released this year?
Yeah, February of this year. Yeah.
Nice. Big year for you.
Big year. My husband's book came out 3 weeks before mine.
Oh my God.
It was a wild year. We decided to both write our first books a few months postpartum as well. We were like, man, I don't know that we would recommend this to other couples.
Yeah.
But we survived it. But yeah, the birth of the book was a challenging and confronting thing. For
yeah.
Sure.
When did you sort of get the idea knowing that you wanted to do that? And I feel like even now it's like, I feel like there are a lot of books out there from therapists and things like that. Like, do you find like it's a more sort of accessible way to sort of get your work to reach more people of like, oh, I'll read a book more so than I might go to therapy? Like, was that sort of the idea? Or
I'm smiling because I'm noticing a theme with myself that I like didn't really want to write a book. Right? I was like, I don't know, you know, like this is, you know, I work with my clients.
The agents came to you and they had an offer. Yeah.
And it's funny, like I had a lot of publishing houses reach out and agents reach out and it's like, I'm not ready. I don't know that I've earned the right to write the book. Maybe there was a part of me that was playing a little bit small, but I really believed that I think sometimes people rush to writing books. And for me, it felt really important to, earn the right to write it. And Connor had gotten his book deal and, you know, his agents were like, Vienna has agents, right? And he's like, no, she hasn't signed with anyone. And so I started a conversation and, you know, things moved pretty quickly. But to your question, kind of similar to the show, I know that therapy is not available to everyone for a number of different reasons, you know, whether it's cost or location or just not being able to find the right fit or just being not ready for it or scared of, you know, what might come up. And I wanted to write something that people could read in the comfort of their own homes, that could be digested at a pace that worked for them. And I believed that the way that I was going to write this book was going to, be hard for people to look at some things, but I knew that I could do it in a way that would be digestible. And that felt important to me. I mean, it was like, listen, writing a book, most people will tell you, like, I think somewhere along the process, you're like, how do I make this go away? Mm-hmm. You know, like, why did I say yes to this? Mm-hmm. And I definitely had a number of moments where I, you know, like came to my knees and was like, can I make the advance go? Like, can I give it back?
Yeah.
And you're like, but you know, no, there's a service here. And it really felt important for me to see my way through and to kind of come back to, you know, the pleaser in me, the part of myself kind of attached to my worthiness wound. That's like, how do I make the writing work for every person who's going to read it, knowing that there's going to be people who've been in therapy for decades, people who've never been in therapy, people who might think that some of this is elementary versus some who are like, this is so advanced and I have no clue what she's talking about.
Yeah.
I remember getting stuck in that place, like wanting to make it land for all. And if I can't make it land for all, then I, you know, somehow fail at writing this book. And I remember having, you know, moments where it's like, just speak it.
Yeah.
You know, speak the wisdom that's been, you know, accrued over, you know, both your lifetime just as an individual and a human who's existed in systems, but also as a professional who has worked with so many people who have shown you time and time again that we must do this work if we're going to find resolution in our lives.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's a field that is inundated with self-help books and, you know, people are writing new books on the topic all the time. But I thought that I had a different approach to it. And we all do, right? It's like, I think our voices are all slightly different. And mm-hmm. sure, maybe we're regurgitating some of the same information over and over again. It's not, you know, true that there is something new every day, right? Yeah. But it's the way that you string your words together that's either going to resonate with someone or not. And, you know, I think that the way that I string words together has resonated with a lot of people. And that felt important for me to step into and find a way to speak it out in this kind of like synthesized way that I had never done before.
For someone who's never heard of the book, how would you sort of frame it as like someone who's just looking to start on their mental health journey, or someone who sort of scratched the surface and wants to sort of learn how to unpack their trauma, or who is it really for in that way? Because I feel like I love what you were saying about struggling with like trying to have it service everyone. And I think like you can't please everybody. Like none of us can. So I feel like the more that we sort of, you know, keep our head down and like focus on what we believe in is best path for ourselves, that's sort of what yields the best result. So how did you ultimately sort of get to that place, and what really is the book for listeners?
Yeah. So the name of the book is The Origins of You, How Breaking Family Patterns Can Liberate the Way We Live and Love. And, you know, all of my work, again, personally and professionally, has come down to really understanding the family systems that we grew up in and how that your resolution from there is showing up in our present day lives. So if anybody has any unwanted patterns, right, where you're like, ah, like I wish I could shake this, or I want to stop dating or pursuing emotionally unavailable people, or why right. am I so reactive and I keep getting into this fight with my partner over and over again, right? Like, I think most of us can raise our hands on this one.
Totally.
Be like, ah, yeah, there's unwanted patterns that we can't shake. And when you can't shake it, right, you sure do all the things that you want to try to do to get rid of it, but when you can't, when it keeps showing up over and over and over again, you know, my belief is that's pain's clever way of grabbing for our attention. You know, our unwanted patterns in life are unresolved pain from the past trying to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. You know, I think so many of us, you know, we go through life and sure, some of us might have things that have happened that objectively sound and are way worse than other things, right? But when we get into this place of comparison, I call it wound comparison, or like, oh, my story is not as bad as that person's story. How would I have the right to, you know, complain or voice something? Or like, oh, well, my parents did so much better than their parents were to them, right? It would be foolish for me to like even feel like I have a problem, right? It's like we have so many things that we go to that distract us from our pain. And this book, you know, I think is a gentle exploration and invitation to see and name and connect with the pain. And some of it might be trauma, but also some of it might just be pain. It might just be wounds, right? I use the language of wounding. That language resonates most with me. I think we all know what a physical wound is. And I think for many of us, it's like sometimes people, the word trauma, you know, gets, I think, overused quite a bit. And for so many people, they're like, I don't feel like I have trauma. And so this book isn't for me. Right? We're like, childhood trauma. And they're like, I don't know, it wasn't so bad. So I guess there's nothing here for me. And it felt really important to be like, emotional wounds happen to all of us. Right. And I talk about five origin wounds: worthiness, belonging, prioritization, safety, and trust. And when I sat down to think, like, okay, what's the human experience? It's like, writing, scribbling down all these different wounds. And finally, I was like, I think these five really encompass it all. And the reality of it is that our pain doesn't even have to come from like these malintended decisions. Our parents or the adults in our lives could have been doing the absolute best, truly, actually. Yeah. And we can still have a wound. And relationships bump up against that wound in the same way that like when we're kids and we scrape our knee or we bump it up against the table and the wound falls off and it starts to bleed again, right? It's like, that's what an emotional wound looks like too. It's like relationships bump up against these wounds over and over and over again until we're willing to look at it and actually name it and acknowledge it and spend the adequate time with it that it needs. You know, when we're kids or teenagers, we don't know how to sit with our pain. You know, we're not like, let me just acknowledge this and grieve, you know, at like 13, we're surviving our way through, right? Whatever that looks like. Yeah. And generally we do it quote unquote successfully. And I think pain, you know, if pain could speak, I think it would say to us, like, I'm not here to destroy your life. I'm not trying to ruin what you've got going on, but I need to keep grabbing at you, grabbing for your attention, because like, you don't just get to go on with life and not acknowledge me. Yeah. You know, like I live here, you know, I happened. And if you could just face me, and you know, we don't have to hang out there forever, but if you can just face me and acknowledge me and honor me and spend a little time grieving, you know, what has taken place, then I can release my grip on you, right? That's the beauty of it, is like when we actually spend a little bit of time with it, its grip on us lessens and it weakens. And then we have capacity to choose differently, you know, as adults in our relationships, whether it's romantic or friendship or with our families today, or, you know, bosses, colleagues, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, you know, who, it doesn't matter, honestly, where you are in the journey, you know, whether you've been in therapy before for a long period of time or whether, you know, you're entirely new to it. I think, you know, yes, I want to narrow it in, but it's funny because I'm like, you know, anybody who's ever had a family, you know, it's like, right, like it will be relevant for you. And also, I think if you are interested in making sense of patterns or behaviors in your life today that just like keep running the show and you can't figure out.
Yeah. I think the wound comparison thing that you say is like so poignant, and like I can relate to that a ton. I mean, when I went to treatment, it was the summer of 2018. It was 5 years ago after I hit my rock bottom and I got sober, and I had a really hard time connecting with the other residents there, because I would see their stories and their traumas and their struggles, and they felt so much bigger and more powerful than mine that I felt like I didn't belong, you know. And it took me a couple of weeks to really understand just like the human element of it, of like whatever the headline of like our article is on the surface, like that doesn't really matter. It's like everything that's happening beneath the surface is really all the same. The way that it's like registering in our bodies and our brains and affecting our behaviors, all that is the same. And to me, what really stands out with everything you just said is that the wounds are inevitable. You know, I think the wounds are going to happen no matter what. When we're kids, almost as just, you know, if you rolled a ball of clay down a hill, you know, it would get some bumps. And I think because a lot of people don't think that, you know, maybe when just one kid told me one time in second grade that I was stupid, you know, like that wasn't a big deal, but literally something as small as that, you know, that can instill a false belief in a child that can then grow into some like very destructive behavior as an adult, you know. And I think I have a lot of times myself where, you know, I feel like I grew up very privileged, or I had a very successful family and got to go to private school and had all these opportunities, and where I get caught in that mindset of like, oh, I'm not worthy of the struggle, or I don't deserve to feel this way that I feel. And I think it's that sort of like neglect and sort of dismissive of it that sort of makes you not take it seriously. And I love what you said too about sort of inviting pain in, you know, that's sort of the idea of just what Mad Happy means. And like this company that we've started is like, we don't have to hang out with sadness and pain every day, but they have a seat at our table. And like, you know, the longer you try and like keep them out of the house, like the harder it's going to be, and like the louder the knocks are going to be, you know. And it's just like letting them in and giving them that seat at the table. It's like and then they lose their power over you. And I think it's like, that's the biggest thing with like acceptance, is then it sort of like loosens the grip and loses the power. So yeah, I love that wound comparison stuff. And I think it sounds like a really amazing book. I might have to get myself a copy at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. We can send you one. I love the way that you're describing it, just a seat at the table. Right? I think sometimes we're so afraid that if we turn towards, it's going to take over.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like what are we going to find? And is it going to be too much? And it doesn't mean to be like reckless with it. And I think, you know, I would recommend working with professionals who can hold that space with you that. But, you know, it is, you know, what you and I are saying is the same. You know, it's like when we start to have a relationship with it, you know, like then its grip and its power starts to change. The way that we relate to it starts to change. And that's, that's the goal, right? It's like we want to be able to shift into this empowered place where we have that pause and we're like, okay, now I can choose a different path than the pattern that I've always chosen, the pattern that has been the extension of my pain versus a choice that's the extension of my healing and my growth.
Yeah. Right?
But you can't do it if you're minimizing and invalidating your story.
Why do you think like human beings are so like just stubborn to just like admit that like something is wrong? You know, I feel like a lot of this really comes from like, well, I don't want to say that I have childhood trauma because then it means that like my mom or my dad did something wrong. And like, I love my parents. So like, they didn't do anything wrong. Or like, you know, even growing up, I tried the best I could. So like, you know, I don't want to make myself feel like I did something wrong. Whereas like, we need to sort of like reframe that thinking to what we're saying is that it's just sort of a part of life. I feel like that's like a big hurdle for a lot of people, is that you sort of like have to sort of admit failure or like something of wrongdoing, which is just like a big like challenge for most people, I feel like, to like show humility in that way.
Yeah, failure, imperfection, the fear of being ungrateful, right? It's like, you know, a lot of times we'll see people just like, I know they did the best and I don't want to be ungrateful or, you know, point to something that was wrong because I know they were doing the best that they could. And people have a hard time being with pain. We're not taught how to do it.
Yeah.
Right? You're okay. You're okay. Think about it as a kid. You're okay. Right. Oh, you start to, you're okay. You're okay.
Right.
No. Nobody knows how to be with pain, right? And listen, I think that parents are doing a really beautiful job of that now. Right? Like people are, you know, approaching these things differently. But I think when, you know, when we were growing up, when our parents were growing up, when the grandparent, right, there wasn't much space to be with the pain, to be with the discomfort, right? It's how, it's a race to being okay. It's a race to being perfect. It's a race to being fine. And we're not taught how to exist in the not fine. And we're also not taught how to hold multiple truths, that something is really hard or that was really disappointing or that was really painful.
Yeah.
And I also have loving parents,
right,
or, you know, like these multiple experiences.
The
both and, you know, that is so true for me. Like my story, I have incredible parents. Their commitment to me was so strong and so deeply felt. And I always felt it as a kid and I feel it as an adult as well. And my parents went through a 9-year divorce process that was the longest at the time in the history of New Jersey. And clearly a competitive family. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, their relationship was really hard. I'm an only child. And so I was like this tiny little human in the system watching a lot of chaos, a lot of conflict, a lot of gaslighting and the true definition of it. A lot of manipulation, a lot of paranoia, a lot of emotional flooding. Like it was really, really intense.
Yeah.
And what they went through was really hard to, you know, even be close to at all. Their stuff was so big, right? They were crashing and burning around me that it didn't feel, at least from my purview as a kid, that there was much room for me to not be okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't add more to an already crashing system.
You better be like, perfect because there's no room for error now. Yeah.
Right. And so I was this little girl who presented like totally fine, totally unaffected. You know, I put myself into things and got really good at them. And, you know, I think I was well known as the well-adjusted kid, right? And I was, I was really good at violin and sports and German, you know, it's like, I put myself into those things and it was such a good distraction. And it also became a skill set, which, you know, I love the, there's a quote in my book from a friend and colleague of mine. It's like our wounds and our pain, our next, sorry, our gifts and our pain, our next door neighbors. Yeah, right. It's like, it's so true, right? 100%. That like the skill set is, and like what sets us apart is birthed from our survival. And yeah, I was a little girl who was totally fine and unaffected, had no needs. And I turned into a woman who also was needless and unaffected and fine all the time. No wonder. And, you know, there were a couple of decades there where I just existed in this space. It's like, I'm good. I don't know how to be with my pain. There was no room for me to be with it as a kid. Right. And that was, again, my perspective. Maybe my parents would be like, nah, there was absolutely room for you. But right, I didn't know that. Right.
Of course.
From my perspective, there was no room. And so I had to detach from feeling. I had to detach from not being okay, from being scared, from feeling unsafe. And that came along with me for a long period of time. Again, just continuing to present. I call it the cool girl persona. I was like, whatever, nothing affects me.
All good, yeah.
Right? And like, if I'm this way, then people are going to want to be with me, right? Because that's easy to be with. And, you know, there was a point in my personal life where I was dating someone, my mid late 20s, and his ex came back into the picture and he was trying to figure out whether he was going to be in that relationship or be in the relationship with me. And I'm like, totally, I understand. Like, this must be so hard for you. You know, I'm like going down this path and, you know, and especially as a therapist, I'm like, there's context. Like, I can understand anything. But it was, it continued to be the like, you're a cool girl, you're unaffected, nothing bothers you, you have no boundaries, all is good, right? And then I remember just having this moment where it clicked in and I was like, there's like that role from childhood, you know, it like has stayed with me the entire time.
Yeah.
I remember for the first time communicating that I was actually not okay with what was happening. It didn't feel respectful, the time that he was spending with, you know, all of the things. And speaking it out for the first time, right? Like out loud saying like, I'm actually not okay. You know, for anybody who's listening, who also maybe resonates with my story slightly, is like, it is not hyperbolic to say that that is life changing, right? To say, I'm not okay when you have always said that you are okay, that you're not fine when you've always been fine or pretended or given the illusion that you are. And, you know, that's the, I don't want to minimize the work, but this work of like, these like unresolved stories from the past, how they find the ways to come into our adult lives and run the show in our relationships.
Totally.
Right? It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And, you know, for me, it was like, I needed to face that pain and it looked like a lot of things. But I had to face that pain in order to pivot and, you know, begin to choose differently in life and in relationships.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me for your story that you were still able to really start your professional career in that way, like without doing that self-work. Like, did you ever struggle with like anything like imposter syndrome, or like, were you just compartmentalizing the two sides? Or like, I imagine once you had that sort of moment, like you said, it's like, oh my God, I haven't even been sort of like doing what I've been doing for work, essentially.
Yeah. It's such a good question. You're the first person who's ever asked me that. I started grad school and I remember my professors and, you know, supervisors and advisors, you know, like talking about, okay, like the impact of divorce.
Right.
And I remember being like none, I got nothing. Right. Like I'm good there. My parents are great friends. 99%
of kids that messes them up, but I'm the one.
But like, I'm the exception. I'm good. And I like held that story through grad school. And I look back at it now and I like have a good chuckle about it. thinking how like generous they all were and just like letting me be on my path and, you know, having to live it out and experience what needed to be experienced. And Yeah, I just like didn't know how to be with my pain. And it's a great question because this is what is true and relevant in therapy. I could lead people only so far.
Mm.
Right? And that was pretty far, right? Like there was a skill set there. I could navigate conversations with people and, yeah, you know, like I could lead people to a certain point in therapy, but then there was a block, you know? Mm. And I don't know that I understood it at that time. Obviously now I can see it.
Totally.
And you know, a lot more years and experience under my belt, and a lot more resolution of my own, you know, life. But I think that's, you know, therapists get into this line of work, whether they know it or not, to resolve what's unresolved in their lives.
Mm.
And those of us who, you know, really commit to the resolution, you know, can take people pretty far.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you feel in therapy sometimes when you're like, I feel like I'm bumping up against a wall with my therapist. I don't know. Like we keep talking about the same thing, or it doesn't feel like anything's changed.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't get there. Like, yeah. And listen, that doesn't mean it's always the therapist. It might be blocks that, you know, a client is having, but it's such a good question because, yeah, I mean, I was still early on in my career at the time and, you know, wasn't doing any harm. It was just, I couldn't take people further than that. And I kept seeing this pattern of like, oh yeah, these unwanted patterns over and over again, these ones that we can't shake no matter how many times we talk about it and try to design something differently. Like we keep coming back to the same thing over and over and over again. And that's where, you know, the birth of these origin wounds and being able to see like, yeah, this, you know, questioning and this lack of worthiness, this lack of belonging, this lack of prioritization, this lack of safety, this lack of trust, right? It's like we need to actually explore these areas and see how these wounds come out to play in our lives as adults and in our relationships with one another.
Yeah. I want to talk about this idea of like a therapist influencer, which like seems even like funny to say, but like I feel like you've built sort of like a brand around social media and like having a large following and like being able to reach people and connect people in that way, you know, TikToks, reels, like things like that. I think it's like amazing and like the new era of like how therapists can sort of communicate. Like, how did that sort of even happen for you? Like, did you just sort of stumble into it? Did you have this hypothesis around like connecting to a Gen Z audience through these social channels? Or like, I feel like that's, you know, been able to unlock like maybe the book, the podcast, like all these other opportunities that you're getting. And I feel like it's such an amazing part of like this new generation of like mental health care and even just like how Gen Zers are sort of consuming content and like, how can we reach them in different ways? And it's like what was once just in these like, you know, stuffy rooms with like a day bed is now like on every screen for everyone to see. I just think it's like such an interesting and like novel idea. And like, I have never really asked somebody about it.
I started my Instagram account, gosh, like maybe 9 years ago, 10 years ago. I'd have to look, but it's been about that time. And I started it with the idea or the hope that I would offer one person a new thought, perspective, lens through which to see something a day.
So you wanted it to be like a pseudo professional, I'm going to be sharing some tips account or something.
Yeah. Like honestly where it started was like reposting, you know, like quotes that were not
like,
even mine.
So, like, very casual, yeah.
Yeah, very casual. Like now you look back at it and you're like, these are kind of corny, but you know.
Gotta start somewhere. Yeah.
Gotta start somewhere. Yeah. And, you know, and then it started transitioning where I started writing longer captions to quotes that I thought were interesting and, like quotes that maybe felt profound to me. And again, like not with any real intention other than if this reaches one person, awesome. And then, you know, builds and builds and builds. And all of a sudden, you know, it starts growing and writing my own quotes and captions and, you know, really being intentional about what I'm putting up there.
Mm-hmm.
I had no expectation for what it would create. I started there before a lot of people moved into the space. There weren't a lot of therapists on the platform at the time. And so I actually do think that I was one of the first up there. And it was in, I remember at one point in my practice, you know, people would call and, you know, want to set up a session and, you know, get on the call and you're like, okay, tell me a little bit about you and, you know, what's bringing you in. And then I'm like, all right, like, well, let me tell you a little bit about me and how I practice. And there was a line where I remember the first person who was like, oh no, I don't need you to tell me about you. I know what you do. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, like, oh, I've been following you on Instagram for like 2 years and I really like the way that you think about things. It's like, oh. And after that, it was like everybody who was calling, like, they didn't even need to have a chat with me, right? They're like, no, like I'm in. You know, I don't take new clients now. You know, I have a full roster. I haven't taken new clients in a few years. I do have a practice in New York. So we are able to take people, but just not with me. But what has been amazing is that like every event, every retreat, every course, every offering just like fills, you know? And that's, I didn't go into it with any expectation at all, but what it became was something like really incredible. And it is amazing. And I think that there's something that like when you're consistent and when you're actually, you know, from an authentic place, which, you know, I pride myself on, it's like integrity and excellence and authenticity and like groundedness. Right? It's like when you bring that energy out into the world over and over and over again, right? Like people find it. Right? They're drawn to it, right? Because there's something that they're like, I appreciate this perspective. I appreciate the consistency. And I like the way, as I said before, you string words together so that something lands for me and I can see myself or I can see my partner, I can see my parent differently. And it's been, you know, a beautiful part of the work. It's a side part. I know people do that all of that for like a living. I see a lot of clients. I run a practice. There's a lot of things that are going on, but I have very much appreciated what, you know, social media, at least for me, trying to relate to it in a healthy way, but what it's been able to offer me and what it's been able to offer others.
Yeah. Is there any like a negative pushback from like the industry or like people of like a more old school thinking that like think this is sort of like negative for like the space in any way of like, do, like, are we making it so people think this is a replacement or like, is there any sort of cons to it that you've come across?
No, not really. You know, I think some people have, you know, feeling, well, people have feelings about everything.
Yeah, of course.
But no, I actually think the older generation in the therapeutic world has actually shifted to the space, kind of recognizing that this is, you know, this is what's here. And, you know, we're really clear that this isn't a replacement for therapy, but it is something that is able to offer, you know, some type of mental health reflection for people. And what a beautiful place to provide something, right? Some service, some support to people all over. You know, it's like, it came and it was going to come. We don't necessarily need to go down the AI conversation, but it's like, it's all that that's coming, right? Totally. As it pertains to mental health too. And, you know, I think there's like, how do I relate to this and me stay committed to integrity and authenticity and care and ethics and morals, right? And all of those things to make sure that what I'm providing and putting out into the world is as clean as possible.
Yeah. No, well, we love your page. So keep it up. A couple just quick hitters I have that I wrote down. I mean, obviously you've worked with dozens, if not hundreds of people and couples and everything. What are some of the biggest things that you think people are getting wrong in relationships?
I think that people race to prove their point and be right versus racing to repair and reconciliation. I think it's so easy for, especially in, you know, couples, it's like when there's some type of rupture or discord, you know, it's so quick to go to this place to prove your point, be right, prove the other person wrong, instead of moving to a place of how do we repair whatever this rupture has just been. I think we forget the story. We forget the context. And I'm really clear that context is not an excuse maker, but context is very important when we're dealing with anybody, but especially the people we love and care about. It's like, I forget that you were a tiny human who was part of a big system where there's mm-hmm. a lot of pain and a lot of stories and a lot of layers and a lot of nuance, right? When I see you just as you are in this moment, I'm annoyed with you, right? Like yeah. I'm irritated by the thing that you just did or said. I yeah. lose that you were a tiny human in a system that had a lot to it. And that's the relational awareness, right? That's the systems awareness, right? That the thing that's showing up right now is interconnected with so many moments that came before this. But if I stay so focused on what's presenting right here, right now, it's going to be hard for us to actually move through and get to a place, not just of like repair and like, great, let's put the salve on and the Band-Aid on and just move forward, but like yeah. an actual reconciliation, an actual healing. And I, you know, people have a hard time looking back, right? People come in, they're like, we want to communicate better. We want our sex to be better. We want this to be better. We want to fight differently, you know, and we're not asking the question, what keeps me from doing that, right? We're not actually getting into the underbelly of the stuff. Okay, follow these 5 things if you want to communicate better. Okay, if you want to have better sex, do these things.
Right.
The question is not, how do I do this differently? It's what keeps me from doing it differently. It's what keeps us from doing this differently. What is the block? That constraint question is so important. And when we stay stuck, or we're like, why can't you just do the fucking dishes? Like, I ask you this all the time. Why can't you? Why can't you? Right. And we don't shift to this place of like, actually, what is keeping this person from doing this?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That like opens so much up.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I just finished actually like a 10-month long period of like working with someone doing a lot of this like conscious partnership work. And it's really a lot about what you're saying of like we had there was a betrayal in our relationship and we went in to work with this woman and she laid it out immediately from the first day of like there's no, like we're not using any of the words like right or wrong or good or bad or like victim, perpetrator, like really like none of that. And like coming at a situation like that, where I think, you know, we so often, all right, this person fucked up, this, you have to make this person feel better, you have to regain their trust. And it's like, no, like looking at it from a completely even playing field and like understanding both people's roles in like the situation and sort of everything that you're saying about the underbelly and it takes work. And I think it's really hard, but I think like when we do sort of reframe our perspective to thinking back to that little boy or little girl or whatever and really understanding more of like the family systems and like the family of origin and like all these different aspects of it, I feel like it's so much easier to then really like empathize with the other person and then, oh wow, now I understand why it's like actually really hard for you to do the dishes, not just that you're just like so lazy and like you don't respect me, like it's obviously mm-hmm. not about that.
Right. People don't understand like what's actually getting activated too, right? Like
yeah.
there is just a lot of complexity to people and relationships. And I think sometimes it's like, I just want this to be fixed or I just want this to be solved. And we actually don't want to put in the work to understand
yeah.
the intricacies of it and yeah. you know, what it is that's actually familiar about this moment, right? It's like, I'm going to just, oh, this person is just nagging me about whatever the task might be, right?
Yeah.
And we're missing the fact that they were someone who grew up in a family system where they never felt prioritized by their parents. And that irresolution around that, you know, shows up when they ask repeatedly for something for them to be prioritized in the way that they'd like to be prioritized. And when you don't do it, right? You're bumping up against that wound, right? It's like we miss those things so much. And so we're having conversations about things that aren't actually the conversation.
Yeah. One last question for you. I'm curious about your own sort of mental health care, like being a professional, you know, what does the therapist do for themselves? Are you in therapy yourself, or what are your sort of favorite mental health practices? I know you guys live in upstate, I imagine there's so much like nature and zen and quiet out there. But what are sort of your go-to practices?
Yeah. Nature is a big one. I am in both individual therapy and couples therapy. And like, it's so important and so valuable for me as a human and also as a practitioner. And I've been in both for a while and, you know, will continue to be. And I think sometimes, you know, just even this idea that like something has to be wrong for you to be in therapy, like nothing has to be wrong. You know, it's like, this is a place for reflection and, you know, introspection. And yeah, sometimes there are things that are showing up that, you know, want the attention, but that has always been a very important place for me. Nature has always been, you know, a deep sense of care. I mentioned this earlier. We have a 2.5-year-old boy. And the impact of playfulness on my mental health is profound.
Yeah.
You know, people say it all the time.
Being so silly,
being so silly, you know, like when you have a little tiny human in your life, you know, it's like there is just a type of joy and playfulness. Like, you're not so serious. And I wouldn't say that I was somebody that was so serious before this, but it's just like this daily reminder constantly to like not take things so seriously and just be in the play of it all. And so deeply appreciative of that. Movement, music. I like to really play with the senses. And so for me, things that are deeply supportive, scent, sound, touch. I remember when I was, you know, going into the office every day, you know, my office was about 15-minute walk from our apartment. And I would always have that walk. And then I'd like get into the apartment, just like, okay, you know, diffuser's going on, music's going on, taking the clothes off, putting different clothes on.
Right.
And now my like 15-minute commute is a 15-second commute up the stairs before my son is like, mama.
Right.
And it's like time to cook dinner and, you know, get into that space. And I remember how important it was, you know, when we kind of moved into this more virtual way of being to still do the things, right? That like my system still needed the separation, right? To like de-role,
right?
R-O-L-E, and be like, right, scent is going on, music's going on, shift the fabric on your body and like let yourself know that, okay, all of that is over there and now we're here and you're in a different, you're in a different environment and you're in a different role. So I mean, there's so much.
Of course,
But yeah, those are some of the things that have always been deeply supportive for, my mental health care.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the show next week, on the book. We'll definitely link everything in this episode. And yeah, say hi to Connor for us as well.
I will, for sure. Thanks so much for having me.
Talk soon. Thank you guys so much for listening to the episode. Whether you've listened to all 124 episodes or this was your first week with us, we appreciate it. Nonetheless, please keep listening. Follow the show. Give us a 5-star review wherever you listen. It goes a very, very long way. If there's any guests you guys want us to have on or topics you want us to cover, don't be shy to message myself or Payman on Instagram. You can find us and we would love for some of your suggestions. Thanks as always for listening. Have a great weekend and we'll see you guys next week. Peace. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.